In Numbers chapter 13 and verse 33, there we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. For a few minutes this morning, I want us to talk about grasshoppers in our own sight. It's good to see everyone out this morning. It's especially good since we were not able to assemble last week because of the weather. It's good to see you, Bill. Jim, the singing was beautiful this morning. Thank you for leading those songs. And it's, I think, you know, when we were here Wednesday, but when you miss a service, you just miss being with everybody. And it's so good that we are all able to be out this morning. So this is another sermon to help us think as we begin the new year. I'm going to go back to Numbers 13. We'll look at some verses here, and that will set the background for some thoughts. So in Numbers 13 and verse 1, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Send men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, every one a ruler among them." And notice he talks about this land that he has given them. "And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. So the spies entered Canaan from the south up through Beersheba, not through Moab." In verse 17, "And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountains." So they were to spy out the land and report back about it. They were to talk about the people that dwelt there, whether they were strong or weak, few or many, what kind of land it was, whether it was good or bad, what size the cities were, whether they lived in tents or in strongholds, and if the land was fat or lean, whether it had wood or not. This, I want to digress for a minute. This is an interesting summation of what they were to find, look for in the land. Years and years and years ago, I had a business book that was based on these principles of searching out. If you're going to start a business or you're looking at the competition, these same things that Moses was using, and they were adjusted for today, but God's principles are timeless and can be applied in so many things. Back to the story. "And they were to bring the fruit of the land, and they were told to be of good courage. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from there a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs." There was all kinds of fruit there. In verse 24, "The place was called the brook of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes, which the children of Israel had cut down from there. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. So they searched the land. They spied out the mountains and the wilderness, the walled cities and the sea coast. From their report, they had never seen such a beautiful, abundant land. They said that it was a land that flowed with milk and honey. And you would not think, after seeing beautiful Canaan and knowing that God was on their side, that they would be ready, that you would think that they would be ready to claim it for their own. But 10 of the spies were not impressed with the beauty and the bounty, but they saw the people as too much of a threat. They said the people are too strong, and the cities were walled and very great. They were afraid of the people there. They were afraid of the evil nations that inhabited the promised land. We've talked about these in our Wednesday night class over and over. The Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, the Hivites. But two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, had faith in God and courage to obey him. Caleb said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." Don't you wish you had a friend like Caleb? Let's go do it. We've got this. The other spies were adamant that it was impossible to take the land because the Canaanites were stronger. And in verse 32, they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof." And in verse 32, "And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, and which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." We know of different groups of people that lived at that time that were giants. And I believe one of the lengths of a bed of one of the giants was measured, I think, like 13 feet, something like that. You don't know if he had his feet hanging over the end or that was a comfortable 13 feet. Someone made the point one time, you look at some of the buildings and structures back then, and the doors, a lot of the doors to the places were like two or three times taller than they are now. Why would they need a door that tall? The Bible says there were giants in the land, and the people were afraid. In Numbers 14 and verse 1, "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. All the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness. Why have the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" So the people were complaining and saying, why didn't God just let us die earlier? Die in Egypt? Why didn't he let us die in the wilderness? Why did he bring us up here for these giants to kill us? In verse 11, the Lord said unto Moses, "How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be that they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them, I'll smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a great nation and mightier than they." Here we see God, and again, God, we have the emotions that God has the emotions that we have. We were made in his image. He loves, hates, is angry, is jealous. Here we see God was fed up with the complaining people, and he told Moses, I'll just get rid of them. I'll get rid of them. But Moses said unto the Lord in verse 13, "If you do that, then the Egyptians are going to hear about it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and thy cloud stands over them, and that thou goest before them by day, thy daytime in the pillar of a cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night." So Moses is telling, Lord, now if you get rid of the people, they're going to hear that back in Egypt, and they're going to spread that all over the land of Canaan. So just to recap what we've looked at here, at 1 year at Mount Sinai, the Israelites journeyed, after 1 year at Mount Sinai, the Israelites journeyed to the Promised Land by way of Kadesh Barnea. Afraid to enter Canaan, they turned back and wandered in the wilderness until that generation died. So when they left Egypt, they had made it up to Mount Sinai. After a year there, they were getting ready to enter into the Promised Land. The spies went in. 40 days, they came back with a negative report. So they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years till that generation had died. Moses had planned to go directly from Sinai to Canaan. Kadesh Barnea was only 150 miles north of Sinai, 50 miles south of Beersheba, the southern gateway to Canaan, but the spies brought a discouraging report and the people refused to go forward. Within the sight of Canaan, they turned back. The people were so afraid that they would have killed Moses if God had not intervened. For them, the opportunity never returned. Only Caleb and Joshua, of the 600,000 men over 20 years old, lived to enter the promised land. So, two men out of 600,000 that were over 20 years old. They were so close, they got a glimpse of the promised land, and they were scared. They were afraid. So, are we like the Israelites and focused on the negative in the world, or are we focused on the one that created the world? You just think about all the evidence that they had of God, his power, his might, his deliverance. And he said that he would give them this land. When God says something, it's as good as done. But the Israelites did not have enough faith. When we get to Joshua chapter 1, Joshua talks about how they are going to prosper, be prosperous, have success. In verse 11, pass through the host and command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days we shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. Verse 13, the Lord your God hath given you rest and hath given you this land. Verse 15, until the Lord have given your brethren rest as he hath given you, and also they have possessed the land which the Lord your God give them, then ye shall return into the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on the side of Jordan toward the sun rising. Over and over, God says, I'm going to do this, and you got to consider it's as good as done. It's as good as done if you have faith in God. But if you start and listen to Satan, you're going to get scared. Do we focus on sharing the gospel, or do we focus on the negative responses that we might get? I don't think anybody here is afraid of sharing the gospel with anybody. I don't want to imply that. I just want to stress again as we begin a new year how important it is when things may look impossible. Nothing is impossible with God. Every soul, just think about one soul. What is one single soul worth? What profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Matthew 16:26. One soul is worth more than the whole world. One soul is worth more than the whole world and everything in the world. Do we believe that? What if we were that one soul that never heard the gospel? But we are not. We are all here because we have heard the gospel. And we need to consider all those souls out there that have not heard the gospel. And whatever way we can, try to get that message to them. Pray for the efforts that are going forward. Pray that we will see physical responses to that. And you may be afraid to talk to people, but I tell you, the easiest person to talk to The easiest person to talk to is when we have a visitor walk in from outside. Every person here needs to talk to that visitor. They have come looking for the truth. They have come looking for a church. If we don't say anything to them, they're going to say, well, that's not the church in the Bible. Maybe you have had the same experience that we have. When we note this, I like to make a mental note and not go back there. But sometimes when we're vacationing and find a church that's supposed to be a sound church and get to it and go there. And it's like you're a ghost that can walk right through the crowd and nobody sees you or says hello. Friends, we need to be the friendliest people sharing God's word. Friends, if we share the gospel, we never fail. If we share it, we never fail. If we fail to share the gospel, we fail. That's the only time we fail, is when we stop sharing the gospel. There we saw the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. You see, part of the Lord's work is mental. It's that faith, it's that belief that God will do what he says to do and will equip us with what we need. Numbers 13:30, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." What did the people say? Like all these people with their thumbs pointing down here. But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." So, when something comes along, who do you listen to? Do you listen to that voice that says you can do it? Or do you listen to that voice that says you'll never be able to do it? Which voice do we listen to? I want to take a little break here and switch gears to make a point. So I was talking about yesterday, we went somewhere, and growing up in the Dayton area and living in Dayton with the Wright brothers, I was mainly familiar with the bicycle shop on the west side of Dayton and the history of that, and had heard and seen some other things, but not much. And as the Wright brothers became more popular with their inventions, life-changing, world-changing inventions that they made, they started to become affluent. They had multiple businesses going. The two brothers, Orville and Wilbur, they had a sister, and their father was still alive, and they decided to build a house because the house that they were living in was very small, very, very small, and people were coming from all over the world to visit them, to visit these two brothers from Dayton. And when people from, they came from here in the country and from over the world, and they would have to be put up in a motel because they weren't able to have them come and stay at their house. So we went and visited the house that they built. They bought, back then, they bought 16 acres down in Oakwood. The place is called Hawthorne Hill because of all the hawthorn trees there. They let people, kids, big kids, still slide on the hill in front of the mansion. But this is the outside of the mansion, and it's amazing. And this is just part of the house that sets up on this hill from these two men. Now, why were they able to build this house? Was it because everybody told them, "You'll never be able to fly"? Or was it because everybody told them, "You'll never be able to fly," but they said, "Yes, we can"? And I had all the slides for this sermon prepared, and after going there yesterday, I thought, I got to add this slide. Because you see on this slide, this is one of my next points. People who mutter these words unknowingly hurt the church in any forward motion of all sorts. A few examples from recent history when people say that will never work. Lord Kelvin, the British mathematician and physicist, he said, "Heavier than air flying machines are impossible." He said, it's impossible. What did the Wright brothers say? It's possible. It's possible. And one of the house was so interesting, and one of the photos, they had photos of them with people, again, from all over the world. And one of them was a photo with a man that invented the helicopter, which would have been really neat just thinking of the conversation back and forth between them. But the world said, you'll never be able to fly. They said, we'll be able to do it. The president of Michigan Savings Bank advising Henry Ford's lawyer not to invest in Ford Motor Company, 1903. He said, the horse is here to stay, but the automobile is only a novelty, a fad. I don't think any of us walked here this morning. We all got in our automobile that someone said, we can do it, we can do it, and we drove here. Ken Olson, president of Digital Equipment Corp, 1977. There's no reason anyone would want a computer in their home. You see, up until this time, computers were for business and the government. The government, nobody's going to want one in home. So what do we have now? The personal computer. And there's no telling how many billion PCs, personal computers, there are. So all of these people, there have been things all through time when people would say, it's not going to work. You can't do that. We've got to have the attitude like Caleb. Let's go up and take the land, and who's going to go with me? But people come up with excuses. We've never done it this way before. Do we evangelize exactly as they did in the first century? People will say, oh, we gotta do it just like they did in the first century. You mean put on our sandals and get our bag and walk down the streets and or get on our chariot and go somewhere? Romans 8:31, what then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? And Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Friends, we've got a good year ahead of us. We've got a good year ahead of us when we put God first and we look at around at each other and know that we can do what God wants us to do. We've tried that before and it didn't work. I've heard this over and over before. I would mention something, oh, we've tried that before. And that's the tone they have. Do we have an example of that? Well, Jesus and Peter in Luke 5. When he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. But Simon answered and said to him, Master, we've toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I'll let down the net. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. And Paul, writing to the church at Galatia, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. When do we give up? Never, never. We keep doing what we can, helping those that can do more than we can, praying for everybody. Well, maybe it worked for you in that other church, but it won't work here. Well, when we go to the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 5, who served the copy and shadow of the heavenly things, as Moses was divinely instructed, when he was about to make the tabernacle, for he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. You see, there is a pattern for the ark, a pattern for the tabernacle, a pattern for the temple, a pattern for the church, a pattern for the work that we have to do today. We don't have to reinvent anything. We don't have to come up with something new. The pattern has already been made, and we have been told to follow the pattern. I'm just not comfortable with this. I don't like this. Have you ever heard that? Well, Numbers 14:3, why has the Lord brought us to this land to fail by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." You see the Israelites complaining over and over and over and over for everything that God had done for them. We would say, how could they do that? But then I have to ask myself, with all that God has done for me, do I complain? Do I lack faith and say, "Oh, I just don't know if it's going to work. I don't know what I'm going to do." Friends, we need to launch out in the deep. I like how we've done it in the past. Numbers 14:1, "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night, and all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fail by the sword, to fall by the sword, that our wives and children would become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?'" What we read earlier. They didn't like change. They didn't want to do something different. And what God has waiting for us ahead is always something better than what is in the past. We might not think it is, but it's for our good. And we look at, they were at the promised land. They were right there, ready to go in, but they couldn't go in because they didn't have enough faith in God. You're just trying to make your mark. Numbers 14:4. "So they said to one another, 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people reject me, and how long will they not believe me? With all the signs which I have performed among them, I will strike them with the pestilence and disinherit them. I'll make you a nation greater and mightier than they.'" So when they said, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt," they thought, "We'll get rid of Moses. You're just trying to make your mark. You're just trying to make a name for yourself. We'll get somebody else to lead us and then see what you say." And again, God was ready. I'll get rid of him, Moses. But Moses intervened. A lot of people just, it's like, I would hate to live with somebody like this, but it's like, They're always looking for something to go wrong. They're always looking for the dark side instead of the bright side. Opportunities come along, and you know, we're never going to get yesterday back. We're never going to get the day before that. All the years we aren't going to get back, but we've got opportunities today. If we have an opportunity, if we wake up tomorrow, we're going to have opportunity tomorrow. And I've told this before. I was leaving Sam's one day, and the person in front of me was talking. You know, they don't talk to you in the store, and then they want to be your best friend when you're walking out. Did you find everything? And this and that. And they started a conversation, and he said, "You know, I really wish I had listened to that person and bought into that company when he said I ought to buy into it." And he was talking about McDonald's. And when they came out, the word was, nobody's going to buy cheap hamburgers. Well, it's probably more of those sold than any other hamburger, whether or not you like them. There was an opportunity, but he was going with the negative side, which a lot of people were. Nobody's going to buy a cheap hamburger. Nobody's going to be interested in the gospel. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever said that? They aren't going to be interested. The gospel is so important that Christ died for all men, not just the good ones, the bad ones, the evil ones, everything in between. Christ died for all men. Christ told us to preach the gospel to every creature. And I think it was Brother Marshall Keeble that said that means when it says preach to every creature, because back in time, you know, some people didn't think that the blacks deserved what the whites deserved. I'm thinking more of a modern day application to his saying, but he said when Christ told us to preach the gospel to every creature, that means every man, that means every woman, that means everything in between. We preach the gospel to every creature. Paul said, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." Why do we need to preach the gospel? Because people are lost. They are in sin. They need to be baptized for the remission of their sins. They need to understand that they do not have any right to an inheritance if they are not in the family. They need to get into the family. Again, you do that by being born into the family. Negative people outnumber positive people. A positive person says something and they get shot down. The negative people did not enter the promised land, only the two positive people. Today, negative people outnumber positive people. Today, negative people will not enter heaven. So the question is, are you positive or are you negative? Are we like the Israelites and focus on the negative in the world, or do we focus on the one that created the world? Friends, God has done everything for us. He's made all things ready. Everything that we need, He has supplied for us in our physical life, in our spiritual life, and not just in this life here, but in the life that awaits us on the other side of this room. Friends, if there's anyone here this morning that needs prayers, needs to make confession, needs to respond to the gospel in any way, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.